Cohen. Undocumented immigrants can drive legally in just a handful of states, New Mexico, Washington, and Utah. Now Illinois is following suit, and so are three other Midwest states. They are, that is, for immigrants who get work papers under a new policy of President Barack Obama's administration. Illinois Public Radio's Chip Mitchell has this report.
The Department of Homeland Security says it's easing up on some undocumented immigrants brought to this country as children. Those who meet certain criteria, for example, they don't pose a public safety threat. The plan's to give them a temporary deportation reprieve and work authorization. The work papers will include a Social Security card. Illinois Secretary of State spokesman Henry Haupt says that could enable them to drive legally in his state.
As long as the Social Security Administration issues an individual with a Social Security number and they have the other documents that are required under Illinois law, then they can apply for a driver's license.
Assuming some of the immigrants have been driving illegally, the Illinois approach could make roads safer. Here's Haupt again.
They have to pass the road exam. They have to pass the written exam, and they pass the vision test. We require so many different things of our young drivers, and by doing so, they, of course, become better drivers.
Illinois also requires proof of liability insurance on the car the driver uses for the road test. So it's possible that allowing these undocumented immigrants to drive legally could reduce the number of uninsured vehicles. For the immigrants themselves, there's more at stake. Karen Siciliano Lucas of the Washington-based Catholic Legal Immigration Network says driver's licenses are vital.
To get around in most of the regions of this country, to get to work, to get to school. Not only that, it is a state-issued identification that shows who you are.
Illinois is just one state that's planning to issue driver's licenses based on work papers given under the new Obama policy. In the Midwest, Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio say they will too. But the governors of Arizona, Nebraska, and Texas are vowing to block efforts to provide licenses to the immigrants. The issue's complicated because to get a driver's license, most states require what they call lawful status or legal presence in the U.S. And the Obama administration says its new policy will not confer lawful status on anyone. It just lifts the deportation threat and authorizes the immigrants to work. Whether states decide to provide the licenses or not, Lucas predicts many will face lawsuits.
We will see battles on this.
Making matters more complicated is the federal Real ID Act. That law is supposed to fight identity theft and keep terrorists out of federal buildings and airplanes. Among other things, it requires states to verify that driver's license applicants have lawful status in the U.S. Real ID is supposed to take effect in January. Janice Kephart focuses on national security for a Washington group called the Center for Immigration Studies.
If you want to protect against identity theft, you've got to eliminate the fraud. That means you need to eliminate the illegal alien community out of that scheme. It doesn't mean that states cannot give driver's licenses to illegal aliens. It just means that they have to do it outside of the Real ID Act.
Like Utah has done, Kephart says. That state created a so-called driving privilege card specifically for undocumented immigrants. If states are looking for guidance from the feds, they may be waiting a while. In response to our questions about driver's licenses, the Department of Homeland Security sent a statement saying it doesn't comment on state-specific matters. I'm Chip Mitchell in Chicago.
All drivers will hit the road in ever more fuel-efficient vehicles in the coming years as the Obama administration has adopted new standards for cars and trucks, mandating nearly a doubling of gas efficiency by 2025 in an effort to slash greenhouse gas emissions. The new requirements are a rare example of an industry agreeing to tough environmental regulations. NPR's Elizabeth Shogren reports.
The new standards were the result of many months of negotiation between the Obama administration, the state of California, the auto industry, and environmental groups. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood says it was one of the best collaborations he's seen in 35 years in public office.
It couldn't have happened if we didn't get everybody around the table and listen to one another.
The industry was interested in negotiating. It wanted to prevent California and other states from setting their own standards. Gloria Berquist is the vice president of the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers.
For automakers, what we really think is critical is that we're going to have a single national program for fuel economy for the next 13 years.
The new standards are the first ever designed to both improve fuel economy and slash greenhouse gas emissions. The way the government calculates it, The average new cars and light trucks in 2025 are expected to go an equivalent of 54.5 miles per gallon. Most drivers won't get this kind of mileage. The targets will vary based on the size of the vehicle. The rule gives manufacturers incentives to produce electric vehicles and plug-in hybrids. Environmental Protection Agency Chief Lisa Jackson says the auto industry is already making strides to meet fuel standards the administration set earlier.
Some of the cars on the road today seemed like science fiction just a few years ago. It's a great example of what American innovators are capable of when they are unleashed.
But the new standards do have detractors. Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney says they're an example of how overregulation by the EPA is hurting the economy and consumers. Amanda Henneberg is a spokeswoman for Romney.
Governor Romney opposes, you know, these extreme standards that President Obama has imposed, which will limit the choices available to American families.
Environmentalists say the issue helps show voters what the consequences would be if they replaced President Obama with Romney. Michael Brune is the executive director of the Sierra Club.
It offers one of the biggest contrasts between the president and Mitt Romney.
The new standards target model years 2017 to 2025. Because that's such a long time frame, the government agreed to reevaluate how things are going after several years. It will examine a lot of things, such as whether the technology is turning out to be as affordable as predicted, and if customers are actually buying the more efficient cars. Elizabeth Shogren, NPR News, Washington.
And now from the gas in your car to gas deep underground. Hundreds of protesters rallied this week in Albany, New York. They're trying to put pressure on New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. They want him to reject a plan to expand natural gas drilling. Specifically, Governor Cuomo is expected to decide soon whether to allow more aggressive hydraulic fracturing to reach gas deposits that are locked deep below ground. As North Country Public Radio's Brian Mann reports, people on both sides are mounting 11th-hour campaigns to try and sway the governor.
The arguments have been framed and locked in for months. Pro-development groups say central New York's Rust Belt, the area that stretches from Albany west along the Pennsylvania border, needs new industry, new jobs. Environmentalists say the controversial drilling technique, known as fracking, would push a cocktail of chemicals deep underground, threatening groundwater that supplies small towns and farms. After years of debate and review, Governor Cuomo's decision is expected any day, so anti-fracking groups held a rally on the Hudson River waterfront. Richard Crow is a retired engineer who lives in Smithville in Chenango County, smack in the middle of New York's natural gas region.
There are a lot of people that could use the jobs, but, you know, what price are you going to put on your drinking water?
But if environmentalists are pushing hard, industry and pro-business groups aren't exactly sitting on the sidelines. Ads like this one, produced by the Independent Oil and Gas Association of New York, have been airing statewide.
So it's not just my family that needs shale gas.
Or my county.
It's all of us in New York.
Industry supporters say a natural gas boom would create 15,000 high-paying jobs, while also funneling tens of millions of dollars in taxes to cash-strapped local governments. Finding any kind of middle ground in this debate has been tough. Governor Cuomo floated the idea that he might allow fracking to go forward on a limited basis, with local towns or counties having the final say. But industry spokesman John Conrad, appearing this week on the public radio program Capital Pressroom, called that idea a non-starter for companies hoping to develop a regional industry with hundreds of millions of dollars worth of infrastructure.
You simply can't begin to let local municipalities determine whether or not it can happen within their boundaries. It just would create an unworkable situation for industry.
Making this decision even harder for Cuomo is the fact that after all the ads and rallies, New Yorkers are still evenly divided. Steven Greenberg, with the polling firm Siena Research, says surveys conducted by his firm show an even split between supporters of fracking and opponents.
There is no safe political play here. This is what I would refer to as an elected official or politician's worst nightmare.
Activists on both sides are fiercely passionate. At this week's anti-fracking rally, Sandy Steuben from Albany said Cuomo's decision will be remembered by liberal voters like herself, who make up an important part of the Democratic base.
If he wants to issue permits, then it's sort of like the usual Paul follow the money story.
Would it affect your vote in the future?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd work to get him primaried.
Finding a serious primary opponent for Andrew Cuomo wouldn't be easy. His approval ratings are sky high in New York, and it's unlikely that this one issue will change that dramatically. But the decision on fracking could begin to shape how he's viewed by national Democrats if he moves up to a bigger political stage, possibly as early as the presidential race in 2016. For NPR News, I'm Brian Mann in upstate New York.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Community Blood Services of Illinois. Blood donations decrease during the summer months, but patient need remains the same year-round. There are no substitutes for donated blood, and donation takes only 45 minutes. Blood donation, it's about life. More information is at 367-2202.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, August the 29th, 2012. It's the birthday of the man who said, "Love is the master key that opens the gates of happiness, of hatred, of jealousy, and most easily of all, the gate of fear. How terrible is the one fact of beauty." That was Oliver Wendell Holmes, the poet and the physician, born in Cambridge in 1809, a friend of Emerson's, of Longfellow's, other Boston intellectuals, who helped to found the Atlantic Monthly magazine in 1857. And it was Holmes who came up with the name, famous for his poem Old Ironsides and also for his collection of essays The Poet at the Breakfast Table, in which he wrote, "We are all tattooed in our cradles with the beliefs of our tribe. The record may seem superficial, but it is indelible." It was his son who was the Supreme Court Justice. This was Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr., who said, "Insanity is often the logic of an accurate mind overtasked. Good mental machinery ought to break its own wheels and levers if anything is thrust among them suddenly, which tends to stop them or reverse their motion. A weak mind does not accumulate force enough to hurt itself. Stupidity often saves a man from going mad." And it's the birthday of the man who said, "The actions of men are the best interpreters of their thought," John Locke, the philosopher, born in Somerset, England, 1632, who believed that all knowledge is derived from the senses and that we can know about morality with the same precision that we know about math, because we create our ideas. His essay concerning human understanding, published in 1688, a big hit all across Europe. Here's a poem for today by